Good afternoon, my conscious co-creators. Welcome to another edition of the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I am very, very pleased that you are all here with me today. I have another wonderful show in store for you with an amazing woman who I'm really looking forward to our conversation today. I hope you'll stick around and join us. Please let us know what questions and comments you have throughout the show. We'll answer them as we see them. Did you catch my show last week with Dr. Christopher Macklin? Really interesting show. I hope you got a chance to catch it. All right. So let's get started, as we always do, with my blog post. And today's blog post, of course, just taking them in order, is entitled, "When we process our past, we will become free from it." Facing our past can be challenging. Looking into our old ways of being can sting. We have grown so much since then, yet the ghosts of yesterday still haunt us. When we look into our past and truly face what we did and who we were, we can begin to heal. What we experienced and how we reacted to everything gives us fertile soil to dig into our own patterns and behaviors. These are valuable clues on the road to improvement, for it is only when we can look at who we used to be and what we did that we can heal from the guilt, the shame, and the trauma we may have experienced or even caused. The past still lives within us every new day. We carry the burdens of our past on our backs and constantly bring them with us to each new encounter until we decide that we no longer want to have that pain live inside us. Awareness of just what is going on inside of us is the first step. How our past affected us and still affects us shows up every day. When we are willing to look into our past, our patterns, and our triggers, we can start to unwind those beliefs that no longer serve us. While they still may have a hold on us, we can lighten the grip. Being willing to be truthful with ourselves about all of this can feel hard. When we seek the help of a professional to support us, we are giving ourselves a great gift. For the support of someone who is trained and experienced in supporting people through the healing process is invaluable. Unwinding those patterns and belief can take time. This journey is not an overnight experience. It is a lifelong effort to grow and be a better version of ourselves. Our demons may try to stop us. At the same time, synchronicities may support us. Regardless of what is happening around us, staying with it until we find the relief or the change we seek is essential. Sometimes, after we start this journey, we doubt ourselves. We ask ourselves, "Why didn't I leave well enough alone?" It is normal to have these doubts. Keeping in mind the goal of where we want to go is important during these times. Our perseverance will pay off in the end. For when we reach that day when we can look upon our past without judgment, fear, or dread, we will feel so free. Perhaps we will even feel compassion for ourselves and anyone else involved. How wonderful would that be? So I wrote this a couple of years ago. It was after I kind of had experienced a bit of a rough time and really kind of came face to face with how much fear I held in my body, how much fear had controlled me in my past. You know, fear of being alone, fear of being left alone, fear of being on my own and not knowing what I'm doing. And it really was, I guess, an energy or a pattern I'd been holding on to most of my life. And it really shocked me when I looked at it and I got some perspective to see how much that fear had controlled my decisions throughout my life. How much it really affected me, because I never really saw that. I saw it that way before. It's like, yeah, we all have fear. Yeah, I'm afraid of some things. But to really come face to face with how much fear had controlled my decisions in my life was rough. It was really hard. It really didn't feel good. It took me a while to kind of get through that and integrate it. And eventually got past it. Do I still have fear? Absolutely. Does it still affect my decisions? Of course. Does it have as tight a grip on me? I don't believe so. And I'm sure there will be more moments where I feel the fear again, or where I see it in a different way, or see how it affected my life in different ways. And I'll release more of that energy. But it just kind of made me realize that we really have to face what we've experienced in our lifetime to truly be free from it. Because there's so much that we live through, that we have experienced, that stays with us, that we don't even realize. And that's the kicker, isn't it? We don't even know how much these old situations, these experiences we've had, affect us. But when we take the time to do our inner work, to take a moment to just stop, reflect, tune in to how we're truly feeling about a situation. And look, when everything's going good, everything's great. You know, that's not when we see those triggers. But when we're challenged, when we're having a hard time, when we are really struggling, that's when it comes up. That's when it's front and center for us. All right. So that's my blog post for this week. Again, the blog post is entitled, When We Process Our Past, We Will Become Free From It. And of course, you can always find my blog on my personal website, theconsciousconsultant.com. And yes, the website was down for a few days. There were some technical things. I got my webmaster to fix it. It is back up. So you can see my blog on my personally branded website. And of course, it's also on the station's website at talkradio.nyc/blog. All right. Now, it is my extreme pleasure to welcome to the show Abby Rosner, writer, baby boomer, and one of the leading voices exploring how the psychedelic renaissance is reshaping the experience of aging. Based in Washington, D.C., Abby is the author of the upcoming book, Psychedelics and the Counterculture of Aging, and the creator of the Elder Revolution newsletter, where she challenges outdated narratives about getting older and offers a bold, meaningful vision of elderhood rooted in growth, healing, and conscious expansion. Abby explores what makes working with psychedelics in later life fundamentally different than in our youth. With decades of lived experience, emotional maturity, and insights from half a century of clinical research, older adults are uniquely positioned to benefit from these medicines. She reflects on the oft-quoted line from Michael Pollan that psychedelics may be waste, quote-unquote, wasted on the young, and examines the specific issues of aging, such as grief, meaning, end-of-life awareness, and spiritual integration that psychedelics can help address. Welcome to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Abby. Please unmute.
Thanks, Sam. Who are you talking about?
Yes, I know. Sometimes when you hear your own bio being read by somebody else, they're like, what? That's me? Really?
It's like, dang.
Yeah. How about that? So, you know, it's really quite interesting. And you know, with this psychedelic renaissance going on, people are talking about, writing about all different aspects of psychedelics. But what got you interested in this particular aspect, which really very few, if anybody, are talking about, which is how more mature people approach working with psychedelics?
Okay. Well, thanks, Sam, first of all, thanks for inviting me to the show, and thanks for that great introduction and for a great question. And, you know, I always like to start with my personal experience, because I think that's what people are always interested in. Like, how did you even get to this topic? As we mentioned before, I think a quintessential baby boomer. I'm kind of towards the later end of the range of dates for baby boomers. I was born in 1958. So I'm now 67. So I came of age in the 1970s in Washington, D.C. And if anyone who's listening also came of age in the 1960s and 70s, you'll remember that there was a lot of drugs around.
Yes.
We were smoking a lot of pot. We were tripping on acid. We were doing all kind of crazy things. And, you know, absolutely. Not very thoughtfully, not very intentionally, but it was everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so that was part of my experience. And then when I got into my 20s, in my later 20s, I graduated from college. I got married. I had kids. And, you know, in the meantime, the war on drugs was happening. You know, there was a lot of crackdowns. And it just, drugs all of a sudden were kind of off my radar. Mm. You know, I would say about 30 years. You know, it was really more the glass of wine. You know, that was really the way to relax and chill. So, but when I entered my 50s, my kids were grown and my marriage was ending, and I rediscovered pot. Cannabis. Now we're calling it cannabis. And it was kind of a revelation, because if back in the day when I was a teenager, when I used to smoke pot, it made me paranoid and nervous. And so this time it was very, very different. Instead of being nervous and paranoid, I was just, it just put me in this wonderful mood. I felt great. I felt relaxed. I had this new perspective on life. And it was really kind of a revelation for me. And I thought to myself, could I be the only baby boomer that's like rediscovering this, you know, the drugs of my youth in such a different, with, you know, with grounded in maturity.
Mm. You know, it's so funny, because I have such a sort of similar path. in that back when I was in high school. I'm a little bit younger than you. I'm only 63, but I was doing LSD in high school and mescaline and peyote and smoking pot like every day for like a year to 2 years. And for me, I didn't get paranoid on pot. For me, it was just a way of checking out. I was kind of not feeling good about my family's situation and just kind of life, and it was pure escapism for me. Though I did have those experiences on LSD that were like, oh my God, I feel like I've touched the mind of God. And then I got to college. I did much, much less, because my first year of college I did really poorly. I was like, oh, it's like my short-term memory was really toast, and so I just kind of got away from it. And then for the next 30 years until I was in my 50s, also, I occasionally would have a puff of marijuana, but just most of the people around me were no longer people who were doing drugs all the time. So it just wasn't in my environment. So I wasn't doing it until, 11 and a half years ago. I went to my first ceremony, which I didn't even really know what I was going to at the time. And had a tremendous experience. And I was like, wow, it's so different from when I was a kid doing things recreationally without a guide, without a facilitator, in a very, unsacred way, to now doing things in a much more facilitated, ritualistic, sacred way. It was just amazing to me.
Right. Well, I think that that was kind of this discovery. And I think probably like you, well, I'm guessing. I mean, I had a meditation practice for many years. I continue to have. So, and I'd done, decades of therapy. So not only was I, bringing life maturity to this, the experience of altered consciousness, but I also had a much, more evolved relationship with my mind. And my, your blog post was earlier was about, working with our demons and our fears. This was what I did decades of work with a therapist with. So, I was already coming to an evolved state, an advanced state, expanded state of consciousness with a more evolved, relationship with my own mind and my own spirit. So that I think added to the qualitative difference in the relationship that I had with this, what I call sacred medicine. Because if I thought of pot as something fun, young, I now consider it as a sacred medicine because the expansion that it opens for me is just a gift. I feel like it's a gift from the universe.
Okay, let's take a quick break.
Okay.
When we come back, I kind of want to just comment on what you just said a little bit from relating to it, but let's get into, sort of this reflection and how it went from just a curiosity into actually working on a book. Okay. All
Great.
right,
Great.
wonderful, Abby. So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We do this every Thursday, soon to be Wednesdays, here on talkradio.nyc. And we'll be right back with our guest, Abby Rosner, in just a moment.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Thank you. And welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're speaking this hour with Abby Rosner, author of the upcoming book, Psychedelics and the Counterculture of Aging. And Abby, you made the comment about how, you know, after your experiences when you were young and then a long time without sort of experience with substances and then having done work in therapy and dealing with, you know, sort of a personal development of your internal landscape, that when you came back to these substances, that you came back to it with a much different relationship. And it's sort of similar to me. I didn't go through years of therapy. I probably should have. But I had gotten sort of, I'd had some experiences early in life that kind of put me on my spiritual path initially. And then things went really bad, really wrong with it. I got very far away from it. I just became an entrepreneur and just focused on making money, couldn't really deal with it. And then slowly but surely, the universe sort of nudged me back onto my spiritual path. So I had come back to a lot of the things I had studied and learned about when I was a very young adult, that coming back, studying with the spiritual ascension teacher and different mystery schools and stuff. But I came back to it with a very strong foundation, like a lot of other people who were studying with the same people. This was all like brand new to them. They had no background. So it's sort of back in the early 2000s when I got back into sort of healing work and personal development and spiritual development work. And so I spent, you know, probably a good 10 years sort of getting back into my spiritual path. And then, you know, the sacred substances found me again. So I kind of get, you know, that whole thing of like coming back to them, but coming back to them from a much more mature perspective and a much more evolved, I don't know, that can be a charged word, but a very different way of seeing things. So I'm curious now how, like, coming back and having these experiences, like, what got you so curious about it that you decided to actually focus on this particular aspect of, like, more mature people coming to work with these sacred substances to the point that you actually decided to write a book about it?
Okay, well, you mentioned Michael Pollan earlier.
Yeah.
And I, on my 60th birthday in 2018, was given a copy of How to Change Your Mind, Michael Pollan's book, How to Change Your Mind. And that, you know, I have always, my whole life, I've been interested in the nature of consciousness. So, you know, a Michael Pollan book about consciousness is like, you know, it's like, I just devoured the book, basically. And it made a huge impression on me. And really what, you know, of all this, of all the amazing material that he covered in that book, what really stuck with me, made the biggest impression, were these studies that were being conducted at Johns Hopkins and NYU, where they were giving terminal cancer patients therapy with psilocybin. Mm-hmm. And the stories, you know, this is Pollan's masterful writing. He took us along with the story of a man in his 50s, maybe, who had like terminal liver cancer. And he was just, you know, paralyzed with anxiety and depression over, you know, losing his life at a really young age.
Yeah.
And he had this experience with psilocybin, and he described it as like having touch the face of God or something beautiful. And then he said, you know, afterwards he said up until his death, he considered himself the luckiest man alive. And I thought, how on earth does something catalyze such a profound change, not only in fear, but this is, fear of death is it's really our most primal fear that we have. Mm-hmm. And it's a huge issue. We don't, you know, we're a death phobic society. We don't like to talk about these things. And yet what I was thinking is that, you know, I'd already been thinking about the issue of cannabis and how enhanced states of consciousness affect how we age. And I thought, well, here we are, nothing like aging to remind us that we all have a terminal condition.
Yeah.
And so If there's something, if there's a possibility of going into some kind of therapeutic process or an engagement with a kind of sacred medicine to confront or to face and to even alleviate that really primal fear, shouldn't we all be at least considering that as a way to experience our older age more consciously? And so that kind of asking that question really was what set me off on this quest. Now, you ask why I wanted to write a book. Well, first and foremost, professionally, and also by my passion, I'm a writer. And I'm not a fiction writer. I don't have a story in my head, but I've always felt that I wanted to use my voice to destigmatize or to make the, to take away the mystery around things, particularly about something that I've experienced. I really wanted to help my people, my peeps, my fellow boomers to understand that, we learned a lot of, we were fed a lot of disinformation. We had our own, our own experience, youthful experiences, but I really wanted to demystify what a psychedelic experience means in older life. So in the personal sense, so I would turn 60, I read the book and I thought, well, I want to, have a psychedelic experience again. And I looked at it as kind of a rite of passage into my elderhood, because I was at a very new stage in life. I was living in a new city. I was starting a new career. I felt full of energy and excitement over this new stage in my life. And I wanted I felt like it was appropriate to have a psychedelic experience. So I didn't know where to find any mushrooms. So I decided to grow my own. And I did a course, an online course, and I grew my own psilocybin mushrooms. And I had a beautiful, beautiful psilocybin experience. And that really kind of clinched it for me. It was like, okay, well, this is really going to be my path. And I decided that I was going to write a book for my community of older adults to explain to them, as I said, to demystify what a psychedelic experience can be in older life.
I'm curious because I've known people who grow their own mushrooms. I've never done it myself, but I've heard it said that when you grow your own plant medicines, that you develop a relationship with it. So the experience is very different than when you take a plant medicine that somebody else grew. So I'm wondering, if you've tried other things, and if there was a difference in that experience from something someone else grew.
For me, every experience is so different that
Different,
it would really be hard for me to qualify. I can say it was a gorgeous experience. It
experience.
really was
Very
with
nice.
my own homegrown mushrooms, but I've had other experiences since then. But anyway, when I started to write the book, I was just kind of curious to see if this was a thing. Is this even a thing? Or, am I the only older gray-haired person out there, doing these kind of experiences? Or is this a much a more widespread phenomenon? And I think that now, the book is finished, and I can pretty confidently say that it actually is a very widespread and underground, largely underground, but growing phenomenon.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have so many questions about it. I do want to ask you about, because I know you interviewed a lot of people for the book, and I want to ask you about those interviews. But let's just take our next break, because it's the bottom of the hour. And then when we come back, I want to get into the questions you asked people, what kinds of responses you got, and what sort of surprised you maybe about the responses you got from other mature people like yourself. Okay.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We'll be right back with our guest, Abby Rosner, author of the upcoming book, Psychedelics and the Counterculture of Aging, in just a moment.
Hey, everybody, it's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
So, Abby, in writing this book, you went out and you spoke with other mature people who also engage in psychedelics. I don't know. Can I ask you, just how did you find people?
Well, so I've been, writing about this topic or investigating this topic in different forums. So over the years, people have written to me. A lot of people have said, oh, what you're writing really resonates with me. And so I had already kind of a backlog of people that had contacted me. And I just reached out and I said, would you be willing to be interviewed for my book? And, most of the people were inclined. But I also was fortunate to connect to a group of underground facilitators that work in my area. It's a professional network, a very mm-hmm. serious therapist, facilitators, amazing, very passionate and ethical people. Mm-hmm. And I told them about my project, my book, and they put out feelers to their clients. And all of them basically said, I'm working with people in their 70s and their 60s and their 80s. And so they connect, they just put out a feeler and people, it was, let me put it this way. It wasn't hard.
People were happy to come forward. That's wonderful to mm-hmm. hear. And so what kinds of questions did you ask them and what kinds of responses really surprised you?
Well, I really tried to keep the conversation as open as possible. Okay. So it was the usual questions. Is this the first time that you're experiencing psychedelics, or did you have psychedelic experiences in your past? And, the answers were all over the place. I talked to people who were in their 70s who were having their first psychedelic experience. Mm. I talked to people in their 70s who'd been tripping pretty consistently since their 20s. Wow. I also talked to people that, many like you and me who had that, that hiatus in between, between their youthful explorations and then their older experiences. So that was kind of all over the map.
Gotcha.
Also, the medicines that people were using were all over the map. I talked to people that, went to South America and did ayahuasca. Mm-hmm. I talked to people who experienced psilocybin in group ceremonies in a basement in suburban, Washington. And I talked to people who did MDMA rolls. So there were all kind of medicines, all kind of motivations, intentions. I heard a lot of childhood trauma, a lot of people who are carrying around a lot of grief. A consistent theme that came up pretty much across the board was, if not now, when? I don't want to live another day bearing this burden of grief and trauma and everything. If I'm looking at the decades that I have ahead of me, I want to find peace. And if this maybe is going to be a way for me to achieve some kind of peace, then I'm willing to give it a go. And the stories were very inspiring. I just want to be clear here that, these aren't stories of people like, oh my gosh, I did psilocybin and now I'm free and now I'm healed and all that. It's a process. It's a learning process. People are really, they're really doing courageous, difficult work. You know, these experiences, if anyone is familiar, they can be very, very challenging. But I think people really felt that it was worth the effort because they wanted to live their older years, you know, with more peace and equanimity. So I think that was a theme that came across. But I guess, you know, you asked about what I found was kind of surprising. And I think that was how many times I heard people say to me, this is now the happiest, most fulfilling, and the most wonderful time of life, of my life. And that's so counterintuitive. You know, we think of in our societal messages are that older age is, you know, this time of decline and irrelevance. Yeah. And here people are saying, this, I'm experiencing such joy and such meaning, such a connection to nature, connection to others. It's such a part of my spiritual evolution that it's really, that's why I call it the counterculture of aging, because we're really offering a very different vision of what older life can be. So
I'm curious what kind of challenges older people had with doing this work. Like doing this work when you're 30, 40, 50 is one thing, but when you're 60, 70, 80, there are different considerations. And I'm wondering, like, did anyone talk about sort of the challenges they had as an older person coming into this work?
Well, I've been actually thinking a lot about this notion of elderhood and how as we move into older, you know, we have there's specific times in our lives for different, you know, we have periods of development. As you go into your 60s and your 70s, I believe, and I'm reading about this, that there's kind of a natural shift that goes in our priorities, in our orientation. I think we're looking more, we're less focused on achieving and building our careers and all those things. I think we're more interested in meaning making, looking at the trajectory of our lives, understanding doing our shadow work, you know, as, you know, in the Jungian concept, like looking at what were the forces that drove us in life? What were the things that we had to suppress because our conditions, our circumstances didn't allow us to express certain parts of ourselves that we had to suppress? So processes like that can be very meaningfully supported with intentional psychedelic work. I think you would, you might resonate with that.
Yes,
I think, absolutely. You know, I talked to people who told me about how their work with psychedelics created a space where their authentic voice could be heard, you know, parts of themselves that because of shame, because of, just not having room for parts of themselves to be expressed, that after they did this psychedelic work with psilocybin or MDMA or whatever medicine, they were able I'm thinking of one person, a very youthful part of himself, a kind of free and irreverent and fun and funny part of himself, just to like break free. And he said, I'm 70 years old, so I have to be careful of my body because otherwise I would just, you know, be jumping all over the place. So, and I think that it just touches on one more point that has an insight that's come to me through all these interviews, is that I think that these intentional psychedelic experiences expose to us that we contain in ourselves all of our ages. We have them all in ourselves, and that as we do this work, it allows us to go back and touch and nurture and fan the flames of parts of ourselves that maybe never had the chance, even in our childhood or in our youth, for whatever reasons, we weren't able to give those, to nurture them with love. Because for many, this is another theme that came up. For many people, the experience of being held in love That, this experience that we know for that from psilocybin or MDMA, some of these medicines, you just feel an overwhelming sensation of being held. What, one of the gentlemen, a man, and I guess he's now 80, but he was talking about being held. He said every fiber, every cell of my being was being loved. That's a very, very profound thing for a person to feel. And when you have an experience like that, that really stays with you. And just to finish the thought, the other theme that comes up, obviously, when we talk about psychedelics in older life is the mortality awareness. Really, I think that this is a really key component, something very difficult for us. We don't like to think about death. We don't want to talk about death, but being able to look at your mortality with your eyes wide open and really understand that if this is the cycle of life and it's a beautiful cycle and we are, we're on the downward end of it, but that downward end also offers these gorgeous moments of
Opportunities.
deepening and understanding and love. I think that that is really the key to what these clinical trials with the cancer patients were pointing to, that it really does help us to make peace with our mortality.
I was fortunate enough to be at the Psychedelic Sciences Conference back in 2 years ago, or three, a little over 2 years ago in 23 in Denver, the big 12,000 person. And
I was there too. I didn't see you.
I'm sure you saw Roland Griffith
Yes,
when he
yes.
got up on stage and talked
Yes.
about having stage four colon cancer.
Right. It was incredible.
And his poise and his grace about facing his imminent demise, but being able to do it with wonder and curiosity. And he said, sometimes he had his bad days too,
Of course.
but the fact that he was able to face this most challenging part of life, as you said, with his eyes open and with even curiosity. I just remember, like, by the time he got off stage, like, he had a standing ovation. There was not a dry eye in the
There was not a
house.
dry eye in the house.
Yeah, it was
Yes,
really
I
something
remember that.
beautiful. And I just thought, wow, if I could even get some percentage of that poise when I face my own death, like, that was really something.
Well, I just would like to add on that note that, I think a lot about what the boomers, we were the generation that revolutionized youth. And we really, we were pretty pivotals in a societal perspective on our impact. And I feel like if we can, the same pioneering generation, if we can offer our society a very, very different envision of what older life is, and really normalize the conversation around death, then we've made a huge contribution. So that's really what I'm hoping to contribute into that conversation with my book.
So, is your book geared towards other elder people maybe interested in psychedelics, or is it more geared towards, like, the population in general to give people a different view of how to deal with becoming older?
I really worked very hard when I wrote my book to make it as accessible as easy to read and as inviting as possible. So I start the book, I don't know if we have time before the break, but I start the book with an examination or an explanation. I call it it's I call it While You Were Out. I wanted to explain to the To an older adult population that maybe hasn't thought about psychedelics for 50 years, like what's happened in the psychedelic world since then? and to bring them up to speed basically on the developments in the clinical research, the
changes.
Guidelines for safe and meaningful journeying. Like, we now know how to use these medicines safely without worrying about the, I mean, there's always a concern, but without taking steps so that it won't be a bad trip, you know, so the basic information, that's the first part of the book. And then the second part of the book, which we can talk about afterwards, is looks specifically at what these experiences offer us in older age.
Okay. All right. Time to take our last break. When we come back, I actually have a different question around more, are there different considerations for older people coming into this work than when we're younger? Because I think it's kind of important, like there are always certain considerations, regardless of medical considerations, mental health considerations, but specifically if there are different considerations that if there's an older person listening to this show, what they should consider before getting involved with this. Okay. So we'll deal with that right after this.
Okay. Great.
So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We've been speaking this hour with Abby Rosner, author of the upcoming book, Psychedelics and the Counterculture of Aging. And we'll be right back to finish it all up.
On Frank About Health, we're not just talking healthcare. We're managing disruption and innovation. Over the last 4 years, I've taken you from epilepsy and COVID to mental health, caregiving, and now the front lines of healthcare transformation. Stay tuned for a healthier future as we bring on the innovators, professionals, storytellers, and advocates who show you how to own your healthcare every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
So, Abby, as I mentioned, if somebody listening to this book, listening to this episode, and they're a fellow baby boomer or mature adult, and they've gotten curious from the things we've said, what sort of considerations that are unique to people who are older do you think they should think about before getting involved with this?
Okay, well, there's many considerations, obviously, as you know, as an older adult. I guess we, you know, can start with the very basic physical considerations. So, you know, different psychedelic medicines have different effects on the body. And there are certain ones that are more, more appropriate for older adults, certain ones that are less appropriate. So I think that what every older adult, before they consider using any psychedelic medicine, is to check with the healthcare provider. Share your medical history, the medications that you're taking, and make sure that it is safe for you to use these medicines. So you might be saying, oh, well, I don't really feel very comfortable talking to my physician about, wanting to do psychedelics. Mm-hmm. So I can say that there are professionals out there who do provide services. They will evaluate your medical condition, look at your medications. Now, this isn't medical advice, obviously, but there are options for that.
Yes, I recently signed up for a course from Ben Malcolm at Spirit Pharmacist.
Yeah, Spirit Pharmacist,
who's really really good, and he actually you can get a consultation with him.
Yes,
so
yes, he's the one I was thinking of.
Yeah,
Ben Malcolm, Spirit Pharmacist.
Yeah.
So I mean, I didn't know if we could mention that on the show or not, but
why not? Give him some free publicity.
Yeah. No, he's great. Ben Malcolm is great. The Spirit Pharmacist, and he's a I can't remember exactly what his official credentials are.
Psychopharmacologist.
Yes. And he offers consultation. So he will evaluate your medical condition, your medical history, your medications, and help you decide a dose, maybe a dosage tweaking, or whether, you know, tapering off SSRI, whatever he'll suggest. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing, is the pure physical aspect of it. Right. And then the mental, let's say your mental state, again, something to consider if it's a time of intense, you know, difficulties, maybe not the greatest time to start with psychedelics, or you want to find a facilitator who's a trained therapist who specializes. In any case, there's a lot of due diligence to do before any older adult would want to embark on any of these experiences. And then I'll also say that there are other considerations. Maybe you want to have an experience like this, but you don't really know how to go about doing it. You know, you don't have a connection to the underground, or you don't want to grow your own mushrooms. I really am a big proponent for older adults of the programs in Colorado and Oregon. If you have the financial resources, in both of those states, you can have a regulated psilocybin experience with a licensed facilitator, with lab-tested mushrooms, and including preparation beforehand and integration afterwards. It's a great opportunity for a safe and controlled psilocybin experience.
And they did just pass a bill into law in New Jersey. It's not legalized yet in New Jersey, but they have created a pilot program through a hospital where I'm sure they're going to be looking for people to participate in their study and their pilot program. So if you live in New Jersey, I would suggest finding out about that, find out what hospitals are going to be involved, and see if you can apply to be a participant.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how the New Jersey program is going. I think they wanted to model it on the Colorado and Oregon, which is not involved in a hospital. They're service centers. But I mean, I don't know. I really don't know. And that's, you know, that's still in the pipeline, let's put it that way. Right. So I think older adults really need to find what their comfort level is, you know, with doing something that's outside of the consensus. Yeah. So, but I am excited about these state legal programs, because I think they really do offer a really solid alternative for older adults.
Yeah. We only have a few minutes left. I really wanted to get to talking about your newsletter, Elder Revolution, and just what is your intention behind it, and what do you sort of talk about on that newsletter?
Okay. Well, so I'll just say that writing a book is kind of like having a child. Yeah. And, you know, it's with all the, you know, waiting and all the pain and all the, but once I finished the book, finished my manuscript and sent it to the publisher, I kind of had postpartum depression. And I thought, what am I going to do with myself when I'm not researching and writing about psychedelics and older life, which became such a passion for me. And that's when that was one motivation for starting the newsletter. And the other motivation was, I realized that when the book does come out, and it's going to be coming out in July, people are going to read the book and go, okay, well, yeah, oh, sounds good. Now what?
Right.
Like, now what do I do? And they're going to turn to me and say, well, okay, Abby, what do I do now? And so I decided to create this newsletter as kind of a resource for older adults, where I could have like a dialogue with, you know, people who are interested in this topic, where they could send these questions, or where I can, you know, I can cover just different aspects of the experience of the newsletter is called Elder Revolution, the newsletter of psychedelics in older life. So that's really my topic. And I'm looking at various aspects of it, from clinical trials to, I just was talking to you about an article I want to write now about having older facilitators, the value of having an older facilitator when you're an older adult. So if you have a choice, like in Colorado or Oregon, you can choose your facilitator. So maybe you want to like really think about as you review the various facilitators that are available, to think of working with somebody with more life experience. So things, issues like that. And the newsletter's free to subscribe. And it is, I think it's www.abbyrosner.substack.com.
Yeah. Abbyrosner.substack.com. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, free to subscribe. You know, if you're interested in the topic, I'd love to have you as a reader.
Yeah. And the book is being published in July, as you said. I believe it's you can pre-order it now on
Amazon. Yes, it's available for pre-order.
Right. But won't come out. Highly, highly recommend it. The link to that will be in the show notes.
Okay.
And Abby, if people want to learn more about you, get in touch with you, where can they find you online?
Well, I do have a website, www.abbyrosner.com. Mm-hmm. And abbyros@gmail.com. That's my email. If you're an older adult, have an interesting story, want to share, you know, I always love to hear these stories.
Yeah.
I'm actually thinking about my next book, so.
That was going to be my next question. Is there another book on the horizon?
Oh, you know, there is, and I just have started to sketch it out. So yes, there is, and it's looking at the experience of older adults, but through a different lens.
Through a different lens. Okay. Mm-hmm. And just lastly, to kind of tie this all up, do you ever regret that you didn't get back into this sooner?
No regrets. I don't have a shred of regret of anything.
Wonderful.
I'm looking forward, not backwards.
That, wonderful. Wonderful. Abby, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much. We'll definitely have you come back on in July or August after the book comes out.
Great. I'd love that.
You know, hear some of the reactions and definitely you'll let me know when your next book is getting ready to come out. We'll have you back on for that.
That'll be a very happy day. Well, thank you, Sam. It's been a joy to talk about my favorite topic.
Yes. A pleasure having you. And of course, thank you, my loyal listeners, for tuning in each week. Without you, there is no show. I so appreciate you. Don't forget about the other shows on the network this evening at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, Frank Harrison and his show, Frank About Health. And tomorrow, Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, Tommy DeMisa and his show, Philanthropy and Focus. Thank you all for tuning in. Take care. We will talk to you all next week.
On Frank About Health, we're not just talking healthcare. We're managing disruption and innovation. Over the last 4 years, I've taken you from epilepsy and COVID to mental health, caregiving, and now the front lines of healthcare transformation. Stay tuned for a healthier future as we bring on the innovators, professionals, storytellers, and advocates who show you how to own your healthcare every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host the program Philanthropy and Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening. listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.